With your own game, maybe when you're volleying the ball, the more that you contact the ball in front, the more likely it is to go down. Just because of the angle of the paddle, I think it's easier to get the ball down with your volleys. And that's what you want with your volleys. It's not about hitting it as hard as you can. Even though I do that pretty often, for the most part, I am just trying to get it down. That's something that I think is more important than anything. Because if you get it down with your volley, then they're going to be making contact with the ball below their waist. And if they make contact with the ball below their waist, well, what can they really do? I don't know how hard they can really hit it while keeping it in. So remember that. Playing somebody that's a banger, that's crushing the ball at you, just volley the ball down. Don't overthink it. If you get it down, you can actually do another thing too. If you get the ball down and then you see them swinging on their recounter on the next ball, just be ready to get out of the way.
For over 10 years, innovation has been at the core of who we are at Selkirk. We take risks, we test, we evolve. Introducing the Selkirk Lab 007. With an Infinigrid surface that lasts at least 3 times longer than rock carbon, and a titanium mesh layer for added power, while maintaining the largest sweet spot available. Because good is never good enough.
Okay. Welcome to another episode of my podcast. If you guys didn't notice, I got a ring light. One of those lights. I've got some comments saying, you know, James, your lighting isn't good. And they were right. So I didn't actually buy this ring light. I'm doing this podcast in another house. And my sister said, hey, here's a ring light because your lighting on your podcast is really bad. So we've got the ring light. Tell me if it helps. If it doesn't help, that's fine too. So we're coming off of a great tournament in Milwaukee. I played with CJ Klinger and got to the finals. So we got silver and pro, and things were great. I think there's a lot of advantages to playing with a lefty. And like I've said many times, I think that the best teams in the future are going to be righty lefty teams. I think that lefties are super valuable to have in pickleball. The advantages across the board, I mean, there's so many of them. I think the main thing at the pro level is two things. I think having a lefty makes it a lot easier to sort of let your partner cover the middle. When you're, let's say I'm on the left and I'm a righty, I can just let, you know, for example, CJ cover the middle and just kind of take those balls, and it makes it a lot easier. But also, whichever player is feeling better about their third shots can take the third shot because there's two forehands in the middle. And that is hugely important because, you know, even the pros can sometimes struggle with their third shots. I think that third shots can vary a lot. I think that it kind of depends, you know, on the day. Sometimes it's kind of like shooting in basketball. Sometimes you're going to be hot. Sometimes you're going to be not, unless you're Colin Johns and you never miss a drop. But I'm not Colin Johns, you know, which is unfortunate, which I was. But anyway, so a couple of things that I'm seeing at the pro level that we wanted to talk about today that I think you know, it's funny, the game is always changing, so we always want to talk about what we're seeing, and I think how we can maybe implement some of these things in the rec game. And I think the main thing that I'm seeing is players are speeding up with their backhands off the bounce with two hands a lot more, and I actually think there's a lot of advantages to it as opposed to just speeding up with a forehand off the bounce. I think that if you speed up with your backhand with two hands off of the bounce across the body of the person in front of you. So if you're on the left, that means you're trying to go right into the body of that right side player in front of you with your 2-minute backhand, speed up off the bounce. You know, seems to me like 75-80% of the time that ball is going to come back in a triangle. They call it the triangle, as everybody says. It's going to come back in a triangle right to your forehand. So if you speed it up with your forehand across the body of somebody, it comes back to your backhand. If you've got a great backhand counter, backhand volley, that's great news. But it seems like a lot of people love to just crush their forehand volley. And what I've been doing really often is speeding up my backhand right at the person in front of me, and then just getting ready for the forehand. And you'll notice it comes to your forehand a lot more often than it will come back behind you to your left side, just because of the angles and how it works with the geometry of the court. You know, if you speed up from the sideline with your 2-minute backhand, if you go this way across their body, for them to get it back across your body to your sideline, first of all, there's a really good chance that it would go out in that case, because it's not really going to come back over your left shoulder and stay in too often if it's hit with any sort of pace. But if it does, that just means that they probably shanked it or were super early on it, which is pretty unlikely. So yeah, for the most part, I mean, that's, if you're familiar with it, they call it the V or the triangle, which means that if you speed up from the sideline to the body of the person that is in front of you, that ball is going to come back closer to the middle, sometimes directly to the middle. I would say, you know, it seems to be 3/4 of the time, maybe even more than that. And that's important, right? Because those are the types of patterns that help dictate the game. And another thing that I think I've noticed a lot is that there's a lot more driving and crashing going on. And I don't know if players work on it enough. I think working on the crash is something that doesn't really happen too much. I don't really work on my crash. And what I mean by crash is, you know, my partner's got the third and then I'm going to go up there and just try to kamikaze my way and crash, so to speak, and poach the next ball. There's a couple indicators here that I think would help. I think that if your partner drives the ball, their third shot, directly to the middle, I think you can, you know, maybe be a little bit more patient and maybe when you're crashing, be ready for it to come to the middle, but don't go all the way across, because there is a good chance that, you know, just like we talked about with the momentum of the ball with the triangle, if somebody drives it from one side to the middle, that next ball will kind of, you know, a lot of the time come back to the other side. So that means that if you drive it to the middle, there's a really good chance that after the opponent volleys it, it's going to go to your partner. And if your partner drives it to the middle, there's a very good chance that when it'll come from the middle, you know, to you. So I think that maybe, you know, if you're crashing that ball, you want to be a little cognizant of that instead of fully just, you know, poaching and going on the other side. Maybe you say, okay, well, there's a good chance it's going to come right back to me. So maybe I'll just get up there and sort of stay put and be ready to move in either direction. But one thing you can be sure of is that if your partner drives the ball down the line to the player in front of them, you can poach pretty aggressively because, you know, think about it this way. If you're here and your partner drives the ball in front of them, you know, to the player that's in front of them on the other side of the court, if you go up there to the net and try to crash that ball, for your opponent to bring it all the way across to the left side of your body, you know, behind you, the chances that are pretty low. And I think that the chances that if you just fully commit to crashing, and, you know, taking that next ball, I think you're going to have a better success rate than, you know, the amount of times that they're going to beat you behind you. So yeah, just go for it in that case. And just remember also that if you're trying to set up the drive and crash or the shake and bake, as they call it, I don't think you should drive cross court at all. Because if you drive cross court to the person cross court from you, they're realizing to go down the line right behind your partner that's trying to crash. So that's something that you should keep in mind. If you want to execute the shake and bake or the drive and crash, I wouldn't be driving cross court. It's just not, I mean, you can do it once in a blue moon, maybe if you're going to keep it really low and it's the opponent that's coming in late, or if it's mixed doubles and that's the case, you can, but I wouldn't do that as often. I would go down the line mostly. So if you have any questions on that, reach out in the comments. Those are the main things there. Another thing is that I would say is, one thing that I'm seeing, is a lot more resetting is two hands, especially in the transition zone. We're seeing players put two hands on the paddle a lot more often. It's funny, a year ago, you know, they were putting two hands on the paddle for backhand drives, maybe some backhand counters and some resets and maybe some dinks. 2 years ago, it was almost nobody was using two hands. And 3 years ago, I think the only guy that was doing it was like Riley Newman. And now we're seeing almost everybody reset in the transition zone with two hands. And that's something that I think we should all remember that, I wouldn't even just say it in my opinion. I think it's time to accept it as a fact that I think resetting the ball in transition, you know, with two hands is so much easier than doing it with one. I think you can do it with one if it's right at your body. You know, that's something that can be done. But if it's the lower it gets, if you kind of just reach down there with one hand, I mean, you'll see Ben Johns do that sometimes or Colin Johns reset with one hand. But I mean, those guys are just so talented and so good with the softness of the hand. I personally think it's easier to do it with two hands. And if you look at the majority of the other pros, the mere mortals that aren't Ben and Colin, I think resetting with two hands is just the way to go. It's more stable, and especially with how much more powerful the paddles are getting, there's so much pace coming at you that if you try to reset with one hand, it's just not as stable. I think unless you've got a really, you know, you've got a heavy paddle and you just have a ton of lead tape around it, you could get away with it. But even Ben, I mean, Ben is doing a lot of two-hand resetting too. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And it's not a swing. So if you have a two-handed reset, that just means you've got two hands on your paddle and you're just blocking it. That's all. Just blocking it. You're not trying to swing. And Okay, guys, big news. There is a holiday bundle going on here at Selkirk. You can get a SLK paddle and two accessories. So that could be bowls, that could be a hat of your choice. Any of those amazing accessories that Selkirk has to offer as a part of this holiday bundle, you can get those for 15% off. So I would highly recommend checking it out. And yeah.
One of the things that I've also noticed is I used to try to meet my two-handed backhand reset too much in front of my body, like a volley. Because when you're volleying and you're countering, you know, somebody speeds it up at you when you're at the kitchen. You want to meet it as in front as possible. That's my, you know, my favorite shot when I'm biggest strength, just my backhand counter, my counters in general. Just meeting them in front and getting them down. But if you're in the transition zone and you're trying to reset, I think you should let the ball come to you. I think you should meet it kind of right here by your body. It doesn't really make as much sense to be as in front with it because you're not trying to get it down. I think for me, it's easier when I'm volleying at the kitchen, if somebody speeds it up at me, to get the ball down if I'm meeting it in front. I think if you noticed with your own game, maybe when you're volleying the ball, the more that you contact the ball in front, the more likely it is to go down. Just because of the angle of the paddle, I think it's easier to get the ball down with your volleys, and that's what you want with your volleys. It's not about hitting it as hard as you can. Even though I do that pretty often, for the most part, I am just trying to get it down. That's something that I think is more important than anything, because if you get it down with your volley, then they're going to be making contact with the ball below their waist. And if they make contact with the ball below their waist, well, what can they really do? I don't know how hard they can really hit it while keeping it in. So remember that. Playing somebody that's a banger, that's crushing the ball at you, just volley the ball down. Don't overthink it. If you get it down, you can actually do another thing too. If you get the ball down and then you see them swinging on their recounter on the next ball, just be ready to get out of the way. Because that's something that happens a lot too. People that are trying to crush the ball, bangers, so to speak, whatever it is, people like me, right? I do this pretty often. I'll hit an initial speed up. And then, you know, if somebody gets the ball down, I might still be a little too engaged and I'll try to swing on that next one. And if they get it down, I'm swinging from too low and I might overswing and then miss that next one out. So even I do it. So yeah, just follow the ball down and then be ready to get out of the way of the next one if you see them swinging super hard. But back to the topic of resetting the ball in transition. If you reset the ball in transition, it's not about getting it down. It's about just kind of pushing it forward, blocking it, keeping it low. And in that case, I think letting the ball come to you so that your arms can be relaxed here, just kind of right in your body, I think that's the best way to do it. You don't want to be rushing it. You don't want to be swinging with it too far out in front and, you don't want to be moving your feet too much, but you also don't want to not move your feet. I think that that's something that pickleball coaches will tell you. It's like, you know, you want to quiet your feet. You want to, you know, maybe try to not move your feet. But I'm not telling you to move your feet like me. I'm just saying that I think that I see a lot more errors because of lack of footwork or late footwork than I do because somebody's moving their feet too much. I would say that instead of moving your feet like me and moving your feet as much as you possibly can, that's not what I'm saying. I would recommend to move your feet as early as you can, because if you see where the ball is going, you see it's going to your left, move your feet to your left as quick as you, you know, comfortably can, because the earlier that you can get to the ball with your feet, the more time you have to prepare with your hands. That's something I noticed, that when I really focused on moving my feet as early as I could, and just getting to the ball as early as I could with my feet, it felt like the game slowed down. And the reason for that is because I'm there earlier. I'm where the ball is earlier, so I've got more time. So if you feel more rushed, it's funny. I think when players feel rushed, if they're in a high-level game and the ball is moving faster than they expect, they tend to actually slow their own feet down, and they try to calm themselves down with their feet. I don't really think that's the answer. I actually think the answer is to be a little more active with your feet and try to get to balls earlier so that you can earn yourself more time and give yourself more time, because that's something that doesn't require you to be the best athlete in the world. Not everybody that plays pickleball is. I think that what you really want to do is, you know, even if you're not fast or athletic, if you can move early, like let's say somebody's, you know, a little slower than me, but when they see where the ball is or where the ball is going, the first thing that moves is their feet. They just try to get there as early as they can and move their feet as early as they can. Well, then there's really no difference. They might get there earlier than me, and then in a way, they've got more time than me, if that makes sense. So that would be something to keep in mind, because you don't want to be reaching and leaning over too much. I think that's the biggest mistake that I see at the rec level. I was just teaching a clinic in Milwaukee, had a great time there at Sure Shot Pickleball, thanks to Antoinette. She set it up. She works for me, and she's the best, way better than Max or Ryan. And yeah, we had a great time. And it's funny, every time I teach these clinics, I think, you know, one of the main things that I see with mistakes is just players that are moving their body like this or this instead of their legs. It's funny, we did this drill on one of the courts where I said, okay, guys, for the rest of this game, you've got to keep your body, your upper body, almost perpendicular to the ground no matter what. So if you see the ball here, you got to move your feet, stay like this. Move your feet, stay like this. You cannot do this. You cannot lean like this. And the quality of the game got so much better. The players were playing, and it was absurd how much better they were playing, and it kind of makes sense. In other sports, you don't want to really be leaning over like this. You want to focus on your legs. Your legs move side to side. Your body stays here. And I think that helps with consistency. Because if you're always, let's say, you know, if you see where the ball is going and you always focus on positioning your legs properly so that your upper body can be doing the same thing every time you hit the shot, then that's how you build consistency, because you're doing the same thing over and over. If you hit the shot one way like this, and then the next time you hit it, you're here or here, you've got to be pretty talented to be consistent with it. So I would just say focusing on your legs, being consistent with your footwork. You don't have to move like me, but just making it so that you're never really reaching too much or you're trying to overcompensate and lean over there with extra wrists. I think that's how you build consistency, because pickleball is a game of consistency. I mean, I'm a guy who likes to hit the ball really hard and I'm a power player. And I'm telling you that, you know, to get to the highest level, or for anybody to really get better, the first thing that you should focus on improving is consistency. It's kind of a no-brainer to think of, but it's a lot easier to get better at consistency than it is at power. You know, I mean, it's like a sprinter. How much faster can a sprinter's top end speed get? How much, you know, more powerful can somebody get with their overhead? I'm sure it's more fun to work on your power, and you can get more powerful, and you know, I'm sure, you know, you can get faster a little. But it's a lot easier to get more consistent and be able to do the same thing, maybe, you know, four more times in a row. And maybe instead of making, you know, 5 out of 10 drops, you make 8 or 9. And that's just a matter of repetition. And I think that building that consistency comes from doing the same thing every time. So if you're sometimes leaning here, sometimes your left foot comes off the ground when you hit the ball, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes you lean back, sometimes you don't. Those are the things that cause mistakes. So that would be my takeaway from this podcast. Try to do this as your homework, maybe just for fun. Try to always use your legs the same way on, you know, every shot. For, I don't mean every single shot. You're not going to use your legs the same way on a dink as on a serve, but every dink that you hit in this position of the court, you know, you focus on using your legs the same way. Every time you serve, you focus on making sure that your legs are consistent with every single serve and your legs are consistent with every single return. So you know how you use your legs on this shot, and that's how you use your legs on that shot. You don't change it up. You try to build consistency with your base, and then don't worry about your upper body. Just let your hands do what they do, and you can't really overthink it with your upper body and your upper body technique and your hands. Because, you know, I can promise you that when I'm playing, I'm not thinking, okay, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to follow through here. It just happens. And the best pickleball that you're going to play is going to be where, your upper body is just doing what it does. And for me, that's what I do. I focus on my legs being the same every time. And then I don't think about my upper body. And that's been my recipe for playing my best. So I don't know if it's going to work for you. I'm just telling you what works for me, you know? So that's all. Thank you for watching.